Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Mom's getting her ears on.
We got caught up on last week's this morning.
Oh, good. Good, good. That's good. Yeah, because we're on part five, so we're moving right along with this series. At this point, I'm not sure how far I'm going to take it. I think one more, unless it goes more than that. But I will say this, when I end this series, it won't be done, that's for certain. There is so much to study, so much to analyze, and you know, we're going to be doing that, clear up to the return of Yeshua. We're just going to continue doing that, watching, right? But I do hope that at least so far, you're getting a perspective of how to watch. That's the whole point. How to look at prophecy so that we can get a perspective of where we're at and be a good watcher. Because if you do that, then at least you know kind of where you're at in the timeline, you know, and knowing where you're at in that timeline is so important because it allows us to be able to understand what the unfulfilled ones are in general, you know, and what to look for. So by watching for those fulfillments, then you can adjust yourself, you can move yourself to be able to know and you know, not be caught unaware. That's what God said. Don't be caught unaware. So this, as I think I said last week or maybe the week before that, prophecy, I mean, God says, get, you know, that we are to have eyes to see and ears to hear. And how does he do that? Where do we get eyes to see? Where do we get ears to hear? We get them from the Bible. We get them from the prophets. We get them from what he's told us, right? And so it's vital because the world around us, of course, has a ruler that doesn't have your best interest at heart. In fact, he wants nothing less than your destruction. So we are literally at war, and most people really don't have any clue that they're even in a war, that there's a battle going on. And you know what? Satan likes it that way. The enemy loves that. But God has revealed the war and where it's fought. We see that in Ephesians. For we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against the rulers of darkness of this age, and spiritual hosts of wickedness. Where? In the heavenly realm. So don't forget that we're at war, because you'll lose every fight you don't recognize that you're in. And this is why, during this series, we've spent so much time exposing him. We want to get him out of the shadows. We've tracked Mystery Babylon. We've tracked his religion, his ways that he wants people to live. And we all know that those ways lead to what? To death. And that's his goal. So we know where the physical, you know, seat or central operation point that he's working out of, and so that we can continue to track him and be aware of what he's doing. Why? Well, because if you're watching your enemy carefully, if you know the strategy of your enemy, Mom, I can't do anything about it right now. If you know the strategy, why don't you come up here where you can hear? If you know the strategy of your enemy, then you can know, right, how to defeat him, right? Because if you don't know what he's doing, the enemy can easily do the same thing. He can devise a strategy to defeat you and wipe you out. Now, our loving Father has definitely given us kind of inside information, if you will. He knows the beginning from the end, and so he gives us that information if we're willing to search for it, if we're willing to study it, if we're willing to dive in there so that we can avoid those attacks. I thought about the movie, The Imitation Game. Now, I can't recommend this movie because of the very heavy gay secondary storyline, but it loosely tells the story of Alan Turing, a guy during World War II. He was a brilliant mathematician. And in one battle in the war, they had recovered this the machine. They called it the Enigma machine that the Nazis were using to communicate all of their battle strategies, all of their movements of supplies, everything to the generals and the people out in the battlefield. And they had one of these machines. The problem was they changed the code. This machine, they could send messages in the open air. They could deliver them by hand. But until those were typed into this machine, you couldn't tell what it was saying. And the machine changed the code, like, I forget how often, like every week or something like that, right? So even if you got the code, it would only be good for a little while. Well, Alan Turing was, because he was so brilliant, a mathematician, they had him put a team together to figure out how that machine was generating that code, because if they could get that code going, they could know everything that the Allies were doing, or the Nazis were doing. So he actually had to invent another machine to figure this out, because there were literally like trillions of combinations. I mean, it was just mathematically, the Nazis figured it's impossible. Well, he did. He figured it out. And it changed the whole course of the war. Why? Because from that point forward, the Allies knew every move they were going to make. And those generals, they didn't have to have a great strategy. They just had to have one that would, you know, undo theirs. And it's the same thing here with us, right? That by God, by giving us insight into what the enemy's doing, then we can battle against it. It's a great blessing. That's why the book says, I think I brought it up a couple of weeks ago, blessed is the one who reads this book, right, and understands it and studies it. Why? That's where the blessings come from, right? And there's other ways that God reveals this stuff to us, because we find some pretty incredible imagery, don't we, in the Word of God. And as we move through this today, I want you to understand these keys here. Heads and beasts are kingdoms. Horns and mountains are kings. Okay? And how do we know that? Just because different references, and I'm not going to take the time, but different references in the Bible tells us, it reveals that. So I want you to remember that today as we dive into this, because we want to do our best to understand what God is revealing to us. And specifically, I want to touch on these five. You'll notice that we're going to be in Daniel and Revelation. Daniel is the key to understanding Revelation. Once again, you can't understand, you know, the back of the book without the front of the book. Our focus is going to be kind of working our way and getting to Revelation 17. That is the rise of the last beast. That's what we need to be watching for. But we've got to have perspective on these other ones in order to understand this last one and what's coming. And I think you're going to find this pretty interesting. In the context of the word watch in this series and trying to understand what we are to watch for, it's imperative that we understand this last beast. Okay? So, again, we're not trying to foretell the future. What we're doing is merely being aware of what has already happened and what to look for so that we can strategize accordingly. So we're going to begin in Daniel 2. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, you probably remember this story, but he was a world-ruling king at that time, and he had this dream. It upset him a lot. He wanted the interpretation of it, but he was sick of all of his magicians and sorcerers and everybody, you know, making stuff up. So he said, well, if you're going to interpret this for me, you're also going to tell me what the dream was. I'm not even going to tell you what the dream was. You're going to tell me what the dream was and then tell me its interpretation. Well, none of them could do it. So then along comes Daniel, and Daniel had prayed for an answer to the, you know, for the dream and all of that. And so we're going to pick it up here in verse 32. Daniel's in front of the king. He's saying this. He says, "You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image, that great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay." And he said, "And you watched a stone which was cut without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke it all into pieces." Now, what we're seeing here, guys, is God revealing to Nebuchadnezzar the world ruling governments that would come, starting with him, clear to the time of the end, when the stone cut without hands, Yeshua, the chief cornerstone, would come and blast it all in pieces. You know, Isaiah 7 or 9 verse 7 says that of the increase of his government, Yeshua's, there will be no end. That's what we're talking about, is that stone coming and then taking over the rulership of the world. We are talking about now, we've been talking a lot about religious organization, okay, and that kind of thing. Now we're talking about political. So these are world-ruling governments, political governments. And so from our historical perspective, we can see that the head represented Nebuchadnezzar's empire himself of Babylon, and it controlled the known world. It was world-ruling. Next, we see that history gives us the Medo-Persians, the Medo-Persians. They took over Babylon and began to rule. That was the next one. Then there was Greece. Now, Alexander the Great comes on the scene in 331 BC, and he, and this is an important point because we're going to see that in prophecy again here a little bit later, he was fierce like no one else was before or has been since in the speed in which he garnered control over the known world. I mean, it was amazing, faster than anybody in history. That empire lasted until 168 BC when Rome gets control and begins its, you know, conquest or whatever, or rulership. And that, and Rome rules clear up to AD 476. Now, the Bible speaks of these empires and said this to Daniel. I mean, they didn't know about this, but we can look backwards, you see, and we can tell exactly from history and understand up to this point. But then there's one more, wasn't there? There was the feet. There was the feet that was of iron and clay. And the iron legs are Rome. But then when we come to the feet, they have iron too, but something else along with it. So this is the last one, the clay and iron feet. And they're this mixture of clay and iron. And guys, this is what we're watching for. Because when this comes in, this will be the last man-made, or Satan-inspired, if you want to say that, you know, world-ruling political organization on this earth. It will be in place when Yeshua returns, when the stone not cut by human hands comes, okay? So there's a lot of ideas about what this clay and iron represent. But I submit to you, it's really important to just let the Bible tell you. I mean, you can read this stuff and just conjure up all sorts of things. But if you just let history talk to you and you let the Bible talk to you, then I think it becomes pretty clear. We already know. We know that the iron represents Rome. Because we have history to say, okay, there's boom, 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 there it is, and there's the iron, and that's Rome. Now, That's the two legs of iron. That's Rome. But then Rome shows up again. The iron's not going to represent something different. The iron is still in the feet. Okay? So that's really interesting. And understand too, there's two feet. Now we look at history. We don't have to conjure things up. We look at history, and guess what? Rome, the Roman Empire, ended up being split into two kingdoms. It was split into the Eastern and Western kingdoms. A split. And notice what Daniel said. He says, "Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. Yet the strength of the iron shall be in it." In other words, Rome is going to be in it. "Just as you saw the iron mixed with the ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly," what's it say, "of clay. The kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another." They'll be together, but they're not gonna adhere. They're not gonna, just like iron does not mix with clay. And it says, "In the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed." That's exactly what he said before. The last one, then the stones are going to come and, you know, it'll never be destroyed. "And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." Praise God. So in these days of these kings, it says, plural. What kings? Well, the first three empires that we saw on that statue all had a single king. And then it came to the legs, and there was two legs. And lo and behold, that kingdom was split. Okay? And then we get to these feet, and the feet have what? 10 toes. Some of those toes strong, some of those toes fragile and weak like the clay. And it says, in the days of those kings, in the days of these kings, Yeshua will return. So what do we need to watch for? We need to watch for the formation of an empire that controls the world with 10 leaders or 10 nations. And guys, it has to involve Rome. Has to. The iron is still there. And you're going to see that in Revelation, these same 10 toes, kings, are represented by horns. So again, back to what I said, horns are kings, right? And both of these are referring to an organization of 10 kings, 10 nations of the final world ruling empire of man. Now, it's really interesting. This is where it starts to really get interesting when you start putting some history here. When Rome split, it happens that it split into 10 nations. Historically, we can see it. History tells us which nations those are. What split into the Western Roman Kingdom, those nations are still with us today. They're in the European territory, illustrated here in green. Still here today. Now, what happened in 476 AD is the Eastern Kingdom, here in red, of Rome, completely destroyed. Just utterly wiped out. So when we look at this prophecy today, we know that the Western remnant of this split of Rome is the iron in the feet. Right? It's the strong. It prevailed. Okay? They survived. The Eastern Kingdom was fragile. It was weak, like clay, like ceramic clay. It was broke into pieces, okay? The clay was overtaken. The iron was strong and was not. But get this, both of them still came out of the legs. Both of them are Rome. And these two kingdoms are going to, the Bible said, they're going to mingle back together, but they're not going to, they're going to come together for a mutual thing, but they're not really going to be, you know, lovey-dovey. Okay? They're going to mix together, these 10 nations. And then, of course, the stone comes and crushes it. But now, I want you to remember, if you can, the previous maps that I've shown you. When we were talking about Mystery Babylon and where she is and all that, I want you to look at this map and look who the eastern split of Rome is. Where is that? It's Turkey. It's Syria. It's Iran. It's Iraq. It's all those same places that Mystery Babylon points to. It's the same thing that geopolitically the eastern split of the Roman Empire points to, the same thing. And here's something that's really interesting, and this was brought up by a guy that I was listening to last week. I'd never taken the time to look it up. But the book of Daniel was written in Aramaic. I want you to look at verse 34 again. We already read this. That the iron mixed with ceramic clay. Would you think it's a coincidence that the word mixed here in Aramaic is the word Arab? The iron of Rome and Arab, Islamic clay, right there together before your eyes. Now, before I dig into this any further, I want you to see how all this corresponds to the beasts of Daniel and Revelation. So we're going to start with the four beasts. There's four beasts with seven heads in Daniel 7. I'm going to have to start hurrying here a little bit because I want to make sure we get all this and get it tied together. God gave Daniel a dream about four beasts. And he also told him plainly what they represent. We're going to look at these. Those great beasts, which he had just described, are four kings. So see, we don't have to guess about what beasts are. The Bible just told us beasts are kings. Okay, and they arise out of the earth. These are the same four kings that we just saw. Okay, remember the four deals. Babylon is the lion. Medo-Persia is the bear. Greece is the leopard. The leopard is the one that had the four heads. Why? Again, looking back into history. Remember I told you, Alexander the Great was the one that came and conquered in Greece, right? Made the Grecian Empire. Well, no more than he got that built, he died. And he had four sons. And that empire was split into four kingdoms. Four heads. Okay? We're going to see more about that later. But that was then the four. Greece, Turkey, Syria, and Egypt. And then lastly, the fourth one is the beast. That's Rome. Okay, so that's seven. The first two, and then you had the four. That makes six, and Rome makes the seventh. So, notice, this is important, there's not five. There's not five. Why? Because the feet and the legs are both Rome. He says there's four, not five. We know this because the iron was in the feet as well as the legs, right? And so the feet and toes are not considered. They don't get another animal. They're considered the same kingdom in that sense. It's a resurrection of it. And we're going to see the beast of Rome again. And we're going to see the same 10 horns corresponding to the 10 toes that we read about. So now, when you hear a reference to Daniel 7, you'll understand that the four are Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome, and Greece had four heads, okay? Four beasts, seven heads. It's all identified. It doesn't have to be mysterious because we're living on this side of it already happening. Now, I want to drop down to verse 23. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms. And it shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it into pieces. The ten horns are ten kings, which shall arise from this kingdom. And this is important. And another shall arise after them. And he shall be different from the first ones and subdue three kings. Okay, so just bear that in mind. We're going to get there. So we see here the ten horns corresponding to the ten toes, don't we? But we get a little more information here. There will be an 11th king that comes and subdues three of the ten. So that's our clue that we need to be watching, don't we? For when nations fall, because three are going to be subdued by this other one, and especially in the Middle East, we need to be watching for this. So now with these four beasts in mind, and the key I gave you at the beginning about the heads and everything, I want to go to Revelation 13, and you're going to see how this correlates together, and we're going to get even more information. Revelation 13, starting verse 1. I stood on the sand, this is referred to as the beast from the sea, you know, the beast of the sea. Notice how it all comes together. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads. What are heads? And ten horns. And on his horns, ten crowns. Why? Because what? Horns are kings, and kings have what?
Crowns.
Okay, so it all goes together. And on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw, so now we're describing one beast. The beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. His mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. Who's the dragon? Satan the devil. His religion. Okay. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. Now Daniel's already told us who these kingdoms are. They're the seven heads, right? Are Babylon, Persia, the four nations of Greece, and Rome. There's no guesswork here. We know that this final beast has the attributes of all of these kingdoms. That he's describing basically the history of the world here almost, right? But notice that the overall body of this beast was like a leopard. The feet were like a bear, the mouth like a... But the overall was like a leopard. And what was the leopard? Greece. And that's who? Alexander the Great. And he conquered the world quickly and unmercilessly. And in his like I said, his reign was very short-lived, right? And so it went to his four sons, those four heads. Bear that in mind. We're going to go to chapter 17 of Revelation. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters." Waters is, I put this in here, it's waters is symbolic of people. So this harlot is sitting over many people, influencing many people, right? Okay, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication. So the harlot's not a king. She's committing fornication with the kings, right? So now we're talking about the political side of things with the kings, and we're talking about a woman always representing you know, church, religion, that type of thing, committing fornication with these, with the inhabitant, with the kings and the inhabitants of the earth, not just the kings, but the inhabitants, and were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. So we have this unified now picture of the beast, all representing these seven heads. It's really consistent. And we've already spent a lot of time, not going to go there, a lot of time identifying this woman, right? She's the woman arrayed in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her head a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. What is she doing? She's riding on and has been controlling and has been influencing all of these empires and kings of the earth. Clear back Daniel's time, foretold the whole thing. This is Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots. We've tracked her from Nimrod, haven't we? We know she's the moon god, and Baal is the sun god. You know, that's her. We've tracked her. We know where her central seat is right now in Mecca. And the filthiness of that fornication is flowing out from there. Let's move on to verse 6. I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Yeshua. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. But the angel said to me, why do you marvel? I'll tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which is the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. Here's the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Mountains are kingdoms. Remember? Okay. So notice it says, I never noticed this till this last week. Notice that it says that only those that are not written in the book of life will marvel at this beast. Marvel means be amazed and astounded, not really knowing what's going on. Okay? Why? Because those that are in the book of life, that are God's people, will be watching. And when they see this beast, they're going to know what it is. They're not going to marvel at it. We're going to know what it is. But this prophecy is dual in that sense, that if you're not watching, you will marvel. You will say, oh yeah, wow, this, wow, yeah. And you'll just be drawn in. See why it's so important. It's so important that we keep our eyes open, that we understand this. Verse 9 tells us that there are seven kings, there are seven kingdoms, heads and mountains. Now let's go to verse 10. There are also seven kings. And he says to him, five have fallen, one is. Now who's he speaking to? John. This is Revelation. This is the revelation to John. Okay? So he says he's saying to John, there are also seven kings. Five have fallen. In John's time, five have fallen. The other one is. Which one is at John's time? Rome. And one is yet to come. And when he comes, he must continue a short time. It's going to be short-lived. So we've got this timeline, and we know right where to put it because he's talking to John. And he's given him past, present, and future to John where he's at. And at the time of John, five had fallen. One was currently in power in Rome, and one is yet to come. So the resurrected Rome, the iron in the feet and the toes, and we'll get to that in a minute, that's what we got to be watching. But notice this next verse, verse 11. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth and is of the seventh and is going to perdition. Now, it's a bit of a riddle, maybe, but if you slow down a little bit and think about all of this, it's telling us that this last kingdom represented by these 2 feet is essentially the eighth kingdom, but it's not really a new kingdom either. It's really of the seventh. Why? Because the iron is there, right? So it's also the eighth, but it's of the seventh. Makes perfect sense. Because it's this mixture. The iron of the seventh in the feet is the eighth. The mixture of the iron and the clay is the eighth, but it's from the seventh. Okay? I don't know how many ways I can say that, but I hope you're getting what it's saying. That it will rise again after John, and it'll be the seventh, but it'll also be the eighth, because we read in that other prophecy that there will be another king. Remember? That will come and subdue. So this starts as 10. And then he says there'll be another one that comes and subdues 3. Right? Okay. So the Bible is telling us that's sort of the eighth one. But it's really of the seven. Because it's of the seven. Because there's still 7 of those kings left. It's still the same thing. It's just a different king comes in and does that. But it's really just the seventh. And which is the seventh is none other than what? The resurrected Roman Empire. Now I want you to notice how all this lines up with Revelation 13:3. We already read this. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded. But the deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. Now, what could this be? When you look at the Roman Empire and it split, did one half of it get a mortal wound? Did one half of it get destroyed historically? Yes. But then it was resurrected. And the world marvels at it. And what's it do? It comes and mingles with the other, with the western half again. The one half was mortally wounded, but resurrected. And it comes back and they mix together. Which is also now, when that other king comes in and subdues the 3, it says it's the 8th. But it's of the 7th, see? We have the 7th, which is Rome and iron. And then you have Islam and the clay. The western half and the eastern half. Okay? Iron and clay. You had one strong side like iron and one weak side that fell and then was healed. It's being healed right now. It's going to come to power. And so here's where some of the previous information I've given you in this series is going to come into play. I want you to watch this. When Rome split into the 2 kingdoms. The capital for Rome of the Eastern Kingdom was moved. You want to care to guess where it was moved to? Constantinople. And in 1473, the Ottomans, the Turks, they conquered the Eastern Kingdom. And so the capital of the Eastern Roman Kingdom fell to the Turks. Called the Ottoman Empire, but it wasn't world ruling. The city of Constantinople, the ancient city of Constantinople, is today Istanbul, Turkey. the capital of the Eastern Kingdom of Rome. You better be watching Istanbul, Turkey. Because the capital of Eastern Rome, the clay of the feet, part of the final kingdom, became the Turkish Ottoman Empire. And that was it right there. Here's the flag of the Ottoman Empire. Symbols look familiar? Yeah. Now look at the current flag of the nation of Turkey. Yeah, they're identical. Wow. They are, guys, the clay. They are the wounded and healed Eastern Roman Kingdom, and they are to be mixed and mingled with the iron of the Western Roman Kingdom and come together in sort of this unholy alliance. And on the right, on the flag, we see exactly who they are. They are the very symbols that we tracked earlier in this symbols. The symbols of Mother Babylon, clear back 4,000 years to Baal and Ishtar. So it makes sense, does it not, that the final beast is actually bearing the symbols of the arch enemy of God. It's no wonder that ends up being what the big fight is, the final battle at the end of this age. We've gone full circle right back to Jacob and Esau, where we started this journey. All embedded in thousands of years of history and prophecy. It's really pretty incredible. And I want to go back, though, to Revelation 17, back to that little riddle, and I want to pick it up in verse 12. Here's 11 again, but 12. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as of yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. Now, again, who's he talking to? John. And so at the time of John, these kings weren't there yet. So what are the kings? You've got kings, you've got rulers, nations, what have you, on the western part, right? And then the eastern part, and they're going to come together, and both of them are going to get their power. They're going to be subject to what? The Mother Babylon. And we know who Mother Babylon is, don't we? That's where it says they're going to receive their authority, their power from her. As at John's time, they hadn't yet. Now, I'm not even going to try and tell you who these 10 kings are. I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to go there. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. But we ought to be able to recognize them when they come. Right? Because God has certainly given us a lot of information to be able to see the structure of what is coming and what to look for, where all this is going to come out of. We know the iron is the Western Kingdom of Rome. We know the clay is the Eastern Kingdom. And it's all been wrapped up in everything in Islam and Mother Babylon and going out from there. And I'm going to tell you something. The Arab Islamic nations, I can tell you this, are going to be organized by Turkey. Turkey is right dead center in all of this. And I challenge you, I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but do your own little research on Turkey. Turkey is right now already, you would think that, you know, the Arabs with all of their money, okay? But what did we learn about that? God is going to take the king of the north and come down, and that's going to be destroyed. That's going to be destroyed. Rivers of pitch, of oil, burning rivers of pitch. It's going away. So where's the seat? Excuse me. Where's the seat? Istanbul, Turkey. We just saw it. The capital moved there. And what are we seeing there? They are gaining so much political power right now. It's unbelievable. They really are the strongest nation in the Middle East. And when all of this happens on the Arab Peninsula down there, whew, they're going to be even stronger. Okay? So they are at the political, they are the center geopolitically in the Middle East right now, and they're getting more powerful and more influential every day. So I want to make one more connection. I want to bring all this together. Hopefully this hasn't been too much information. I kind of hurried through this because I thought I was going to have to, but we're getting there. And with this, we'll actually answer the cliffhanger. I asked the guys earlier if they remembered the cliffhanger from last week. Remember how we talked about God saying that he was going to pour out his vengeance on Mother Babylon because of the temple? And there's just all this speculation. Well, okay, well, he must be taking out his vengeance on Rome because it was Rome that destroyed the temple in AD 70. And then you got other people who say, that kind of understand some of this, and they say, oh, well, you know, the Arab nations and in Islam, they're occupying that space, and so that's what the vengeance is about. And so, well, which is it? And I said, well, what if it was both? Remember that? How could it be both? How could it be Rome and, well, you're kind of starting to see that now, aren't you? Right? Because you got the Eastern split and the Western split. How could they be both? Well, I want to make that connection even stronger. And we do that, we need to go to Daniel 8. This is the prophecy of the goat and the, the ram. Verse 5. And as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west, across the surface of the whole earth, touching the ground, not without touching ground. In other words, so fast, right? And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. What's a horn? King, which I had seen standing beside the river and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. History and other scripture tells us that this goat is Alexander the Great. He was this notable horn. He came fast and furious and he conquered Persia. And history tells us, as I've mentioned, at the height of his reign, he died, right? And his kingdom was divided into his four sons, exactly as the Bible predicted. Let's go to the next verse. Therefore, the male goat grew very great, Alexander the Great. But when he became strong, the large horn, him, his kingship, was broken. He died. And in place of it, four notable horns came up toward the four winds of heaven. And here we go. Out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and towards the glorious land. Why is all this so important? Because the little horn represents the Antichrist. It represents the system, this unified system that includes everything that is anti-Yeshua, anti-Messiah, anti-Christ. Okay? And so it's this system that the world then will follow and come together to fight him at his return. And this horn, this leader of this system, will come from one of the four territories of Alexander the Great's sons. Has to. Here's the four horns. Now I want you to look at this. Where are the four horns? The exact area of the eastern split of the Roman Empire, because that was where he conquered. Syria, Egypt, Turkey, Greece. So the seat of power of the system of the anti-Messiah must come from one of those areas. So says your Bible. And your Bible tells you exactly where that seat is. You know that? It tells you where it is. It tells you where that throne's at. Very plainly. Revelation 2, verse 12. And to the angel of the church in Pergamos write, these things says he who has a sharp two-edged sword, I know your works and where you dwell. Where do you dwell, Pergamos? Where Satan's throne is. Satan's throne's in Pergamos. Now, Yeshua said that. That's him talking. I know you guys in Pergamos. That's where Satan's throne is. We really do see over and over in this Bible some very specific geographical references where things are going to happen. So many people speculate, oh, the beast is the United States, or the Antichrist is the United States, the whore of Babylon has got to be the church coming out of the U.S. and because it's encompassing the globe. Sometimes one or the other, sometimes people think it's all three. No, it's not. Yes, we have our place in all of that. We certainly support it. We certainly have become drunk on the wine of her fornication. But the Bible says plainly, we don't have to guess. We just have to take prophecy and match it up with history. Now, would you be surprised where Pergamos is now? Where it happens to be located? Is it one of these areas? Would that be too much of a coincidence? One of the four horns that became the Ottoman Empire that is now led by an Islamic caliphate flying the symbols of Mother Babylon and being the seat of the system of the Antichrist? By this time, you probably wouldn't be surprised, but before I tell you, do you remember a few minutes ago where I told you that the capital of the Eastern Kingdom of Rome split off to and went to Constantinople? What is now Istanbul, Turkey? Yes, that is Pergamos, Satan's throne, the seat of the geopolitical power of the Antichrist. The Bible's telling us this. And it's sitting none other than in the capital of the eastern territory of Rome, the clay, exactly as the prophecy was given to Daniel thousands of years ago. And it's all going to come together, but you know, praise God, that stone's coming. It's going to crush this whole thing. Okay? Now I want to zoom in on Istanbul, Turkey, and just show you something kind of interesting. This is Pergamos. This is Istanbul, Turkey, the city. As I said, it's the strongest. Turkey's really the strongest Arab nation. And this is the capital. Now, what's it look like to you? Some say it looks like a horn. What did Daniel say that was going to come out? He said a little horn, right? And I want you to notice that this city today is called the Golden Horn. Just hiding right there in plain sight. All right. We understand, I think, who the people are that are represented by these various images, these prophecies. And so we can finally address how it is that God takes vengeance on Mother Babylon, right, for his temple when it was Rome that destroyed it, right? Okay, now we've already seen a bit of the answer, right? Because Rome is the eastern side, and so we get that. But We also remember, too, that in AD 70, when the temple was destroyed, it was the Roman authorities that commanded it to be done. Okay? So it was Rome. But who actually did it? Who actually came in and destroyed the temple? Now, it's going to still be Rome in that sense, because Rome said, come do it. But which side? I'll just give you the answer. Okay. It was the 10th Legion of Rome. You look back in the history books, who actually went in and physically destroyed the temple? The 10th Legion of Rome. Now, the 10th Legion of Rome came out of the city of Antioch. And guess who lived in the city of Antioch? They were Syrians and Arabs. They were of the eastern split of the Roman kingdom. They were Mother Babylon. And so God knows what He's doing. He knows who these people are. He knows. He can see it all, right? And so when He says, I'm taking vengeance on my temple, the same people that are occupying that temple right now are the same people that destroyed it, which is the eastern side of Rome. Both are true. Yeah, Rome destroyed it. But it was Mother Babylon that did it, the eastern side. And that's who He took the vengeance on. When He says, your rivers are going to run, burning rivers of pitch, I'm sending the king of the north down and I'm going to melt you where you stand. I've already seen that. We've gone over a lot of information so far in this thing. And, you know, so I wanted to make sure I kind of tried to bring this together. But I really encourage you to go back over this series with some paper in your hand like Sherilyn does. And, you know, maybe draw your beasts and maybe do whatever you have to do to draw lines or whatever to get this in your head, because it's important. Because you've got to be... guys, that's your eyes to see and your ears to hear. And I don't know if you guys watch the news, whatever, most of it ain't worth listening to, but you do need to have an ear towards the Middle East. You do need to watch what is going on over there. And watch Turkey. Watch down there in where Medina and all of that is. And be looking for these things. I could try right now and summarize all this, but we'd be here for another 30 minutes. Okay? But just remember, you're not trying to map out predictions. We're wanting to have an understanding of what to look for, and we're trying to do that by looking at prophecy and in a historical context of where we are today. And so by doing that, we'll get hints of what is coming and know what to look for. And I think the Bible has really given us a lot to go on. I mean, I've looked into this more recently than I have in a long time, and it really is amazing how much really there is that's revealed. But I do believe, like I say, you know, we might finish this series next week, probably will, but you know, there's so much more to discover here. Next week we're gonna start looking at the return of Yeshua. There's a lot of scriptures, you know, a lot of scriptures in the Bible about the return of Yeshua. And we're going to try to maybe dispel some things and look at that. So, but until then, I think let's huddle up like we always do and maybe, you know, hash this out a little bit. Sound good?
Good.
All right.